This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
People fear violence post-election, even before, during the process, during campaigns.
That's VOA's Ananancio Miguel in Maputo on the upcoming election in Mozambique. Details coming up. Also, in Uganda, police cancel Bobby Wine's Independence Day concert at the outskirts of Kampala. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, a heavy security presence has deployed at the home of Ugandan musician legislator Robert Chagulani, popularly known as Bobby Wine. This follows police's cancellation of Wine's Independence Day concert that had been scheduled to take place today at Wine's One Love Beach at Busabala in the outskirts of Kampala. Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
Yamandres and family and friends, welcome to the live rehearsal. So sing, Mumbian!
Bobby Wine spent all day yesterday rehearsing for the commemoration of 50 years of Uganda's independence.
57 years after breaking the chain of colonialism, it became our country. This became our home once more. We had hopes, we had aspirations. Our fathers and mothers jubilated. But today, we are living in a country where we have no right to even dress the way we want to dress, simply because it annoys a 75-year-old dictator.
Although previous concerts had been called off, as Wine persistently challenged the long-time rule of President Yoweri Museveni, he was sure the show would go as planned, as police hadn't communicated of any cancellation.
We wrote to police a while ago, and as the law mandates them to respond to us, police has not yet responded to us. That, in a way, communicates to us that they have no problem with our show.
Police cancelled the concert, dubbed Osobola, on grounds the organizers failed to submit plans for medical care, traffic control, crowd control and security. Wine's home turned into a mini battalion this morning, as security organs, including police and the army, pitched camp to prevent him from leaving for the concert venue more than 20 kilometers away. Police and troops also deployed at the One Love Beach, where the show was to take place. Patrick Onyango is the Kampala Metropolitan Police spokesperson.
Today there is no concert at the One Love Beach. It was insisting that it's going, and our mandate as per the constitution, we are supposed to detect and prevent crime. So we are preventing a crime from being committed. Definitely it is not taking place.
Wine managed to elude the heavy deployment, but was later intercepted by police before reaching the concert venue. Wine wonders why, of all Ugandan musicians, only his shows are cancelled.
Everybody else has been enjoying their rights. Our fellow artists have been holding their shows, and some of them were attended by the president. So we expect to have the same rights as our fellow singers.
On Easter Monday, police stopped a concert by Wine on grounds that he failed to comply with the guidelines. Wine has filed a pending suit against the government for cancellation of his shows. He says more than 125 of his concerts have been cancelled since he joined politics in May 2017. Wine has said he will run for president against Museveni. The government has banned people from wearing his signature red berets. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
An escalating insurgency, attacks on political campaigners and a terrified population have set a worrying scene for Mozambique's election on October 15th. In talking to VOA reporter Anancio Miguel in Maputo, I started by asking if he had any major concerns regarding the upcoming election.
People fear violence post-election, even before, during the process, during campaigns, there were political activists, members of opposition parties being threatened. And actually, one national observer was killed this week by police cops in the province of Gaza, which is a province stronghold of the ruling party, Frelimo. So one of the major concerns is really violence around this election process. And actually, Salazar Page, which is in a platform of NGOs that monitor elections, they say they feel intimidated that the process won't run smoothly as they wish. Therefore, they are trying to find ways to protect local observers who will be in many polling stations around the country.
So are you saying it's not going to be free and fair?
That's what's being said. If an electoral observer is killed like a week before election, that shows a sign. And he was killed by members of the police, which shows, some expert I spoke to, that there's actually death squads in Mozambique who are targeting people who voice themselves against the system. So it say that the ruling party wants to keep in power, and it's not like encouraging other political players to come around. And also they fear they might lose the election, and therefore they might lose their business interest that they gain through political influence.
Too many negative indicators just before this thing is even starting. Anancio, while the polls looks on the surface like a simple two-way contest between the long-ruling Frelimo party and the opposition Renamo party, analysts say it's a complex situation for the South African nation. So tell us a little about the leading candidates.
At the moment, the leading candidates are Frelimo's Philippe Nyusi, who is the incumbent. He is the president at the moment, and the leader of Renamo, the main opposition party, Mr. Ousouf Mahmadi, who came after the death of Afonso Dhlakama. But there are also other players, who is David Simango, who runs the Movement for Democracy in Mozambique, a party with its stronghold in Sofala province. But at this time, the major contestants are Frelimo's Philippe Nyusi and Renamo's Ousoufou Momadi, and David Simango come as the third main candidate.
So, Anancio, you are there, and the country will be having an election about a week. In the last few days of the campaign, tell us what the mood is like and what you are seeing right now on the ground.
People are struggling to make ends meet. People are not really in the campaign mood. Political parties, they do their rallies. They mainly target like young people. They are willing to go to vote. And as a matter of fact, I spoke to some young people who they say basically that they need a Mozambique where there's no corruption. And they say they're basically tired of seeing political leaders leading a very good life and the majority of people not having a better life. And they also say it's about time for the ruling party to step out and try some other solution. But ultimately, that's going to be seen in the polling stations. And also, opposition party, they fear that the election will be rigged, and violence is also a way they're using to intimidate local observers. As you know, election mostly rely on local observers, since there won't be actually many international observers to control the situation. Besides, some of them don't know really the real situation of the country, while local observers, they know the systems and they can navigate easily. This is not saying that international observers are not important, but they work well with the support of local observers.
That's Anancio Miguel talking to me from Maputo about the upcoming Mozambique election. Zimbabwe's economic crisis seems to bring bad news almost every day, with persistent and frequent price hikes for basic goods and services. Now, electricity costs are jumping as power cuts last over 12 hours a day. Reporter Kudza Zinawash has more details.
With prices of just about everything rising fast in Zimbabwe, the latest hit to the wallet is a 300% increase in the cost of electricity. A statement from the Zimbabwe Energy Regulating Authority, or ZERA, says the new average tariff is effective October 3rd. In a situation reminiscent of the economic crisis of 2008, the government has stopped releasing financial data. Estimates put the inflation rate at 300%, and the new currency is depreciating painfully. Daniel Chigudu is the editor of Open Parli, an online publication that covers parliament and political developments. He says the situation is getting worse by the day.
There's no confidence in the economy. People just don't trust the policies that are being put in place because there's no consultation. Electricity has gone up, fuel has gone up. We cannot talk of a country when you don't talk of electricity. You cannot talk of a country when you don't talk of fuel. So when fuel has gone up, when electricity has gone up, it simply means everything has gone up in the country.
Chigudu says Zimbabwe is in need of urgent solutions to its many economic hardships. Makomborero Aruzivishe is an activist, and he says
it's an abnormal situation. Every week we wake up to Zera announcing hikes in fuel prices. Every week we wake up to Econet announcing hike in data costs and communication. We wake up to electricity being hiked. And to almost on a daily basis, with basic stuffs within shops, bread, we have the likes of mealie meal and other basic commodities are rising up in response.
He adds that the price hikes do not match the stagnant salaries of many Zimbabweans, with doctors staying home and speculation circulating of a national strike. Haruzivishe says the situation spells disaster, including yet another Black Christmas, which may be worse than the past ones.
This is a very desperate situation, which is leading to an implosion. These price hikes in services and commodities, they are not tallied or resonated by hikes in terms of income, of salaries, of workers.
Government says the electricity price hikes will help the country improve its power output. They say the prices have been inspired by the need to import power. Diesel prices at Wange Thermal Power Station and the inflation rate. Chigudu says the challenges that fuel and other key commodities, which are mostly imported, are pegged at the US dollar rates and then converted to the local currency, whose rate against the US dollar keeps changing. For VOA, this is Kudza Zinawashe from Harare.
18 past the hour, you were listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. The World Health Organization reports proper care could have prevented vision impairment or blindness in about half of the more than 2.2 billion people globally who suffer from these conditions. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva on the findings of WHO's first World Report on Vision, launched in advance of World Sight Day tomorrow.
The report attributes the increase in worldwide eye problems to an aging population, changing lifestyles, which are leading to a rise in type 2 diabetes and limited access to eye care in low and middle income countries. The World Health Organization reports people who live in rural areas, those who are poor, people with disabilities, and ethnic minorities are among those who suffer most from bad vision. Technical officer in WHO's Prevention of Blindness and Deafness Department, Stuart Keel, says conditions such as short and farsightedness, glaucoma, and cataracts are about four times higher in the world's poorer regions than in high-income regions.
For instance, in Western and Eastern Sub-Saharan Africa, have vision impairment rates, distance vision impairment rates, that are eight times higher than all high-income regions. We know that about 60% of all vision impairment cases are found in three Asian regions alone, that being South Asia, East Asia, and Southeast Asia.
WHO says cataract surgery could prevent 65 million people from becoming blind. It says early diagnosis and treatment can improve conditions for many of the 76 million people suffering from glaucoma. And eyeglasses, it says, could vastly improve the eyesight of more than 800 million people who currently live with blurred vision. Coordinator of WHO's Prevention of Blindness and Deafness Department, Alaco Cieza, tells VOA, research indicates that children who spend too much time on their electronics are likely to become visually impaired as they grow older.
The major concern is that if children do not spend enough time outdoors and too much time indoors looking at their tablets, their computers, at these activities, that they will increase the probability of becoming myopic and also to increase the severity of the myopia.
Cieza warns the more severe the myopia, the more difficult the treatment. Her advice, she says, is clear. She says children should spend more time outdoors kicking a ball around and less time indoors looking at tablets, television, and computers. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The International Committee of the Red Cross says its highest caseload of missing persons in the world is currently in Nigeria. Nearly 22,000 Nigerians have been reported as missing in connection with a 10-year-old insurgency by Islamist militant group Boko Haram. Chika Adua files this report from the heart of the insurgency in Borno State.
About 5 years ago, Abdul Hamid Bala narrowly escaped a brutal attack. Dozens of Boko Haram fighters invaded his hometown of Gwoza in Borno State. He says many Boko Haram members infiltrated the community, but there were about 10 of them chasing us on motorcycles. They were shooting at us. In the midst of the chaos, Bala lost sight of his father and younger brother, who have been missing since. He reported their disappearance to the International Committee of the Red Cross. The Red Cross says it has recorded almost 22,000 people as missing in northeastern Nigeria. 99% are linked to the Boko Haram insurgency. Nearly 60% of those in the registry were minors at the time they disappeared. The ICRC's president has described the situation as every parent's worst nightmare. Even so, the registry doesn't capture everything. Edward Muthoka, the head of ICRC's Restoring Family Links team in Maiduguri, said that's because Boko Haram is still active in some areas.
The security situation determines where we can work and where we cannot work. So this is, the 22,000 is, as I said before, is like the tip of the iceberg, because what about the areas where we never had a chance of going to? What about in villages where something happened, there was an attack, and then everybody was wiped out?
He told VOA that the ICRC taps into community resources.
We are talking to local leaders as well, and trying to make them understand the reasons why we are here. Yeah, and that's why for us the local structures are very important in our work.
The Nigerian government acknowledges it is struggling to reunite families. The chairperson of Borno State's Emergency Management Agency, Yabawa Kolo, said the government hopes to learn from international aid groups.
When you don't have the capacity, either in terms of human resources or in terms of institutional strength, it becomes a challenge to carry out the responsibility, because we are learning from those of international partners, the international workers who have the expertise, especially the ICRC, UNHCR, and UNICEF.
The nature of the insurgency means that people have been displaced many times, making it harder to find them. Even so, the ICRC has solved 367 cases of missing persons, helping to bring closure to relatives who don't know if a family member is dead or alive. Chika Odua in Maiduguri, Nigeria, for VOA News.
Dozens of women have marched in the capital of Ghana to protest impunity surrounding attacks on women and girls in the West African country. The activists added their voices to the global conversation on justice for victims of sexual abuse and holding abusers accountable. Stacey Knott reports from Accra.
Justice! When do we want it?
Now!
Protesters marching through Accra, a sign that Ghana's Me Too movement is gaining strength here. Victims of domestic and sexual violence are publicly naming abusers, while authorities are being criticised for not making the safety of Ghana's women and girls a priority. Protest organiser Eugenia Barfor-Bancor said Saturday's march was intended in part to draw attention to a recent case of four young women who were kidnapped and murdered in the western region of Ghana. Police have been widely accused of mismanaging the investigation.
The average Ghanaian woman is still, you know, living the reality every day of living with the abusers, you know, having to face the police or the justice system not supporting them at all, their community shaming them, everybody around. If it's not the slut shaming, it's the system, the patriarchy system alone does not support the women, especially for victims. So we still have a long way to go, I would say. But I think that all it takes is one step. That's why we're going to the field.
As they marched through the streets, protesters were dressed in black and held placards that called for an end to rape and domestic violence. Some held placards bearing the names of victims. Passers-by stopped to watch the procession, some cars honking their horns in support.
Yes means yes and no means no.
Wherever we were, wherever we go.
Yes means yes.
The march was promoted over social media, the central medium for the global Me Too movement. Protester Pukwa Aru hoped those watching the march would be inspired to take part in the future.
I'm joining the march today to fight for violence against violence against women. I think it's so important. Women are half of the population in Ghana, and yet we are targeted constantly.
This is a sentiment shared by Ghanaian radio broadcaster, activist and feminist Felicity Nana Nelson. She uses her work on the radio, as well as her large social media following, to hold perpetrators to account and advocate for the rights of women. She is one of a few strong female voices on breakfast radio in Ghana.
I'm putting gender on the agenda. That's the whole point. So when an issue comes up, it's like, okay, what is the woman's side of this? How are women being affected by this issue? So I try to bring that to the fore.
The protest ended with a candlelit vigil for all victims of sexual and domestic violence and to show solidarity with the worldwide Me Too movement. Stacey Knott for VOA News, Accra.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Misha Dubinsky, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa. Voice of America's Straight Talk Africa puts you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they talk about the most important social and political issues that affect you. Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.